Bharat Niwas team for giving me this opportunity. When it comes to history, especially Indian history, there is such a long memory without a particular order. And when it came to looking into Kerala's history, I realized that I had a lot of fragments that was not fitting together. So I was looking at a framework that will give me at least some sense of order, a sense of progression in the way the culture has evolved over a period of time. And this image represents, it's actually outer wall of Kerala temples. During festival time, the walls get lit with this diya, and it's amazingly beautiful at night when the entire temple is lit like this. Generally it is in square form and you can walk all around, and besides the temple, all around there will be large space, so you can move away, come closer and experience that entire lit space, the sacred space. I thought it's a nice image to start with, also it represents a sort of journey towards the infinite. And yeah, let's move on. Here is the framework given by Sri Aurobindo. I found it to be the right structure to investigate the history of Kerala. Particularly, you see the 10 avatars, the 5th and 6th, Vamana and Parashurama. They are key players when it comes to Kerala's memory. And Sri Aurobindo says these 10 avatars represents a parable of evolution. I always kept this as a reference, but I never applied it. And when it came to looking into Kerala history, I started looking through this perspective. So what I'm going to say is based on this. Can you move on to the next one? So first, just get a gist of that framework. First is this fish, then the tortoise, then the land animal, man lion. Then this next are the one we are concerned with. The dwarf, then the Rajasic man, Parashurama. The Sattvic and onwards you can skip. We will come to it later, in the later phase of the development. Next. Here is the fourth avatar, just before the fifth, the dwarf coming into the picture. We have man lion, the stage bridging man and animal. It is sort of representing a stage of evolution in which we have human body, but the mind is not yet developed to be like a human. We are still animal pretty much, and the divine manifests as this man lion with enormous strength, human. And this is the stage that is preceding the dwarf, which is concerned with Kerala. So the dwarf, before we come to it, okay, let's move on to the next one. Here is someone who was idealized as a great and perfect king, who was the king of Kerala. And at present, Kerala is celebrating a festival called Onam. It is in the memory of this particular king. At that time, it was supposedly the ideal, the golden period of Kerala history. And I used to wonder about this particular story. He was grandson of someone called Prahlada. This Prahlada is the one who invoked the previous stage, that is Narasimha, the man lion, and established, and he is the grandson who established the kingdom that was perfect. And then the story goes, the gods turned jealous, and then they found a way to get him out. And let's move on, just before. One thing I found very interesting about the ideal time unheard of. The child mortality rate was zero. The parameter they were used to refer to a golden age, I found quite interesting. Many parameters are there, no lies, things like that. Okay, let's move on to next. Here is Vamana, the dwarf, the fifth avatar, the problem maker in our good old kingdom that was in perfect condition, the golden age. And the story goes that the gods turn jealous about this perfection on earth, and they want to change the game. So Vishnu takes birth as this dwarf called Vamana, and he comes to this kingdom of this king at a time when he was doing a yajna, and he had declared that he will give anything to anyone who asks, and he was extremely generous. And Vamana comes to him at that point and asks him, "Can you please give me just 3 square feet of land?" And the king had his guru, Shukracharya. Shukracharya sensed there is something going funny here, something is wrong, and he warned him, "This is dangerous. Watch out, don't give him anything. You're going to lose all that you have." But the king said, "I have a promise to give anything what people are asking for, and this is nothing, and I'm going to offer it." And they had a little conflict between them, but king was king and he had made a promise and he cannot break his word, and it was the perfect time. So he said, "Anyway, if it is God who is asking, I will give. Whatever I have is given by the Lord." And he said, "Okay, you can take." And at that time, the dwarf grows into infinite size. And in his first step, he measures the entire earth. And in the second step, he measures the heavens. And there was no place for him to keep his third foot. And king had no option but to offer his head. And Vamana put his foot on his head and pushes him down to the underworld. That was the end of the golden era. And he became another. And he was given a boon that he can come and visit his people every year during this period. And that's what Keralites celebrate, as the king is coming to see us. So we prepare ourselves in best possible ways to receive the king. And I used to wonder why on earth a perfect kingdom should be destroyed like this. And I couldn't make any sense out of it, God's turning jealous about the king. Then I found the meaning when I looked at the picture through Sri Aurobindo's framework of 10 avatars. The previous stage was of the man, or rather what the king represented, the perfection, was the perfection at the level of man-animal. The mind was not yet developed. And that was the level of perfection that had to be broken in order for the mental stage to develop. And that was the physical man, the physical shape itself, like purely like a man with physical mind developing. And dwarf represents, even Sri Aurobindo used in the early stages of the development, simply thought, the physical mind with its habitual movements. And Vamana represents that stage where the mental development is beginning on earth, but bound by the physicality. It is important to remember that it is time which is still bound by the physicality, because the next stage represents the vitality, the rajasic stage we are coming. So before that, so that's what gave me some sense of how to make sense out of this weird story that we had inherited. Okay, and then this king goes down and goes down to the subconscious, and then he can come back. And once in a while, every year, he comes back and we celebrate. Can we move on to the next piece? So we received the king with grand deal of celebration. Now left is the honors of here, the festival feast, the boat race, and we make this flower arrangements and dances. There are a lot of greeting cards specially designed for this particular king. And there's one strange thing that happens during that period. Next slide, please. Something called Pulikari, the tiger game, where people come out on streets painted as a tiger. Like the full animality is brought out and celebrated. And that was the thing that was put down during Vamana's period. It is allowed to bring up and you celebrate. And we invite the king and celebrate this play of there will be a hunter and there will be tigers. And it is an excellent, colorful procession that happens in Kerala. And yes, kids, we used to really look forward to see it in the city. I used to live in the village and we used to go all the way to the city to see this. And it was quite an amazing thing. And we had no understanding of what that story meant. And thanks to this occasion, I was in trying to investigate the story to tell you what this thing is. If I am to otherwise show this photograph, which was not making sense to me. But with the framework what you are doing, it made sense why this is happening. So that was the celebration that was happening. Can we go on to the next stage? Another trouble that came was this king was doing his sacrifice on the banks of Narmada River, which is somewhere in Gujarat, Maharashtra region. And we are supposed to be Keralites in the down south. And was not making sense. So again, there is a logical problem with the historical memory. And there is even a temple, a place called Trikakara in Kerala. It is known as the Holy Feet. That is where supposedly our Vamana put his foot. But at the same time, the river is up there. So it was not making sense. Can we move on to the next? So here, when I was looking into early history, where the way Srivastava was talking about it, one of the peculiar nature of Indian civilization was that before even Indus civilization is a period where it was already physically anchored. Whereas earlier to that, it was clans that were moving around, and the land wherever they occupied was known by the name of the clan. And when they moved from place to place, wherever they went, that land became their land. So the name was not fixed to the land, it was fixed to the clan. And it was much later period when the settlements began. City buildings began somewhere around 5,000 years ago. The name started getting grafted onto the soil. Till then it was very holy. So this explanation from Sri Aurobindo gave me some clues. What was known as the Kerala Putra, they did not necessarily be anchored here down south. They were probably floating around in different places. And in Mahabharata, they were all participating in the war on the side of Pandavas. And there are a lot of references that became pretty clear. I mean, at least started making sense. Can you move on to the next? So that's where the next avatar, the sixth one, the Parashurama, the Rajasic stage of human development, where mind is developing but with the Rajasic tendency. And this stage was known for his anger. And he exterminated Kshatriyas 21 times. And from the early young, he was the son of another rishi. But these are not the kind of ideas we have about the rishis. But here is the history saying, a raging saint who was into genocide, who was killing Kshatriyas and establishing certain kind of order and power in humanity. And he had acquired tremendous power. And the birth of the land called Kerala is ascribed to this particular sage called Parashurama. The Parashurama is referring to the axe, and Rama is his name. And his greatest weapon was this axe. And he is the one who brought people from the north to the south. And to create the land, he threw his axe into the sea, and the sea receded. And that cloth became Kerala. And that's where the next settlement happened. So in the sixth statement, you put together this information, it started making sense. And that was the period where Kshatriyas, where the rulers were pretty quiet. That's where he was establishing some sort of an order. The earlier stage had certain perfection established by the physical mind because of its limited tendency towards being conservative. But once the rajasic stage develops, all that values start breaking down. And he was going outright, killing the kings who were all doing terrible things, and he didn't mind a huge genocide. And at the same time, he is highly respected in the tradition because he was not just killing around, he was also wise, and he was doing the right way of killing, establishing dharma. And he taught Kalaripayattu. He is one of the founding fathers of Kalaripayattu, the martial art, especially the northern kind of Kalaripayattu, and he still revered. And Swami, move on to the next. And even now, the royal family of Kerala, that's their palace, they still consider that they are the founding member now. Okay. They have come from Narmada River, and Parashurama is established. And this is a historical story they still hold on to, which is connected with all the way to this story, and it started making sense. Next. And here we have this train called Parashurama Express. One start every day in the morning from the southern extreme, and another start from the northern extreme, and go all the way up and down. And when I was joining engineering, I was going from the middle of Kerala or Thrissur to south using this train for the first time. And Parashurama is such a deep memory in Kerala. In Kerala History Museum, in front of the museum, we have his statue. And when we were kids, in our field, father discovered huge deposits of seashells. And he was so thrilled, saying that, look, this land was created by Parashurama. Look at the deposits. And we had the mining going on for a long time. And bullock carts used to come and collect the seashells and go. And these were like a great proof that the land we were living was created by Parashurama. There was no doubt about it. And Kalari, of course, was Parashurama's contribution according to the memory. And there is a Damasa, there is a temple for Parashurama. So can we move on to the next? Next is Agastya. When we talk about Parashurama and Kalari, we can't leave Agastya behind, because he is the one who brought in the southern. He is known for Siddha medicine, southern Kalari, southern drama. He was a sage who had already had Ashtasiddhis, the eight powers. What Sri Aurobindo refers in the Vijnana Chatushtaya of his Sapta Chatushtaya. The eight siddhis, he had all those siddhis. And the next avatar, Rama, in Ramayana, when he was looking for support to find Sita and go to Sri Lanka and get her back, he visits Agastya, who had already come to south. There are plenty of legends about Agastya who came to south and established his ashram. And Rama meets him. Ramayana has an order that is vertical, top down. Rama comes all the way top down traveling, whereas Mahabharata is horizontal. Ramayana is vertical, he is coming down all the way and meets sage Agastya and get his guidance, get his blessings before he go for the walk. And that's a modern illustration depicting that historical memory. Next. And Agastya is remembered by his presence in this mountain called Agastya Kudam, and there is still a pilgrimage that goes on where there is his deity. People still climb the mountain. It's a pilgrimage. And here is a poet who wrote a beautiful poem called Agastya Hriday, the heart of Agastya. And he's a state award winner and one of my favorite poets. He got many, many awards. And he was imagining that new poem that won award. It's about Lakshmana taking Rama and going to Agastya, because Sita is already abundant. And he was equating Sita with the nature, current world, the earth has been polluted, damaged, destroyed. And Lakshman was asking Rama, why did you allow this to happen to Sita? Now let's go to Agastya and meet him. And that poem, and in Kerala poems, we do not have the concept of poetry reading, we have poetry singing. We sing poetry. So it's a, let me try to recall those few lines. Only the truth had lost one leg, only three legs were left. First was Krita Yuga, then Treta Yuga. These three avatars, Vamana, Parashurama and Rama, they were the ones who were establishing the physical, vital and mental stages of human evolution. And he tracks that Treta Yuga to be 5088 BC to 4183. I was quite surprised by that date because it precedes Indus Valley civilization. That's supposed to be something that we know as the last end that we can trace. And here is a whole different type of chronology that is emerging. There's a lot of research that are happening right now. We're trying to track the time backward based on planetary observations, stuff like that. But this is an important area of investigation, and I found it very, very interesting. Next. 10 avatars, we are like coming to the next stage of the three stages, Krishna, Buddha and Kalki, where the mind was beginning to open to the higher ranges, spiritual ranges of the mind. That is what Krishna offers to the upper mind, and Buddha tries to shoot beyond to supreme liberation, and Kalki comes to correct it. So we are now heading for a period of enormous mental development in human history, because these people are establishing that, especially by the time of Buddha. Let's move on to the next. The pure mind getting spiritualized. There was this 600 BC, and that was sort of a peak when across the globe there was an explosion of intellectuality, and the mind reaches its finest peaks. There was Socrates in Greece and Confucius in China, Buddha here, and it was happening globally. So there was this universal mind coming to the stage of enormous mental development, and during that period was sort of peak, but it was preceded by a great deal of development. For example, Buddha's contemporary, Jaina Rishi Mahavira, who he was supposed to be 24th Tirthankara. That is, there were a lot of things going on behind, before him. So let's move on to the next stage. Here is the context of what was happening. Now, even around 1000 BC, Arabs, Phoenicians, Israelites and Indians were engaged in sea and land trade through Red Sea. And Greeks joined the story only around 200 BC and followed by the Romans. And much before that, a great deal of trade was happening here, and the nerve center of that trade was in Kerala, called place called Musiris. That is the spice center of the world. And Roman kings used to worry about the depletion of their gold reserves due to too much import of pepper from Kerala. They used to dig gold and get pepper, and that used to deplete Roman treasure. And it used to be a major concern for them, because everyone wanted pepper, and the business was creating a major loss from their financial point of view. And that used to be the route where a lot of things were happening, a lot of exchange was happening between the civilization. It was sort of a global civilization happening at that time. And this created, well, with trade comes transfer of culture across. Move on to the next piece. So here, after Buddha's arrival, we have Ashoka expanding his kingdom. And he did not manage to get hold of the southern tip, Kerala, Tamil Nadu area. The Kerala Gujaras were too strong. And that area remained defended, resisting the invasion from the north. And that's important to remember, because this area would remain defensive of all the movements coming from the north, especially the invasion, the war conquest. They were more into cultural exchange, trade with the rest of the world, and they were very powerful. It is when we come to Shankara, we will see another story here. Okay, let's move on to the next. Somewhere in 70 CE onwards, there was Jewish people coming to Kerala because this trade route was already well established. And when the second temple was destroyed, a large number of them came here and settled. And they continued till 20th century, and when Israel was formed, a large number of them came. But this is only place probably in the world where Jews were not persecuted. They were given places and well protected. Next, Christianity came to Kerala long before the British came and conquered Kerala. In the first century BC itself. You see, at that time, Roman Empire was having trade with the rest of the world, and see, the western coast of India is full of ports, and Muslims is it was the biggest port at that time. And St. Thomas came through that trade route, bringing Christianity to Kerala. And currently 20% of Kerala population are Christians. And when he came, the story is that he met many of the Jews and converted Jews into Christianity, even many of the local people into Christianity, and Christianity was growing here. And when later when the British came, there was an issue, because these Christians were not recognizing the Pope and the church and the entire hierarchy, and there was a lot of issues with that, and later they integrated. Okay, that's the history of Christianity's beginning and growth in India, long before the missionaries started coming later. Next. Then Islam. Islam came by the time of 7th century, right after Muhammad, maybe even during his time itself. And that little mosque was built long ago, even much before Islamic invasion came to India. And Muslim settlements were there. It used to be trade and cultural export. And we know that mathematics was developed, algebra particularly, in Arabia. There was a major link happening between these two. I'm referring to mathematics because we will come to it soon. There was Arabia, then concept of zero goes to Europe and the Renaissance in Europe, and the story completes the circle later. So here, Muslim traders were coming, settlements were there, and great deal of exchange was happening with the southern part of India. And currently 25% of Kerala population are Muslims. Next. Now, 8th century. Here is the time when Buddhism had already spread across India, and even Kerala quietly it had spread, and it was quietly taking over. And the Vedic memory, Vedic knowledge was about to get lost. And it was necessary to protect the Vedas, and Shankara's mission in particular was to protect the Vedas. So that was his life's mission, and he went around and established this whole Mathas across India. And within that field, Buddhism vanished. And that was the end of Buddhism in India. And the Shankara's method was of pure logic. Remember, we are coming down after Buddha's period, the peak of intellectual development. That is the time when Palmini, Patanjali, all these people were writing extremely sophisticated scientific books on linguistics and all kinds of fields. And Shankara represents sort of a peak period where the war between these two ideologies were taking place by pure logic. And he was defeating the opponents by pure logic. Just like in today's world, mathematics is the only language that is precise enough to be used as a means to prove things. You have a theorem, you can prove it. Once it is proven, there is no question about it. So that kind of a linguistic precision was brought into the language, especially after Panini. Panini grammatical rules are practically like a programming language, highly precise. And they were debating using that programming language, high precision language, which was Panini grammar, which is very different from the Vedic Ram, which was far more fluid. And he was defeating through his logic all that was existing around. And he re-establishes the Vedic knowledge, he protects the Vedic knowledge and goes back. And he had a very short life, and his memory in Kerala is very, very strong, not only in Kerala, all over India. The Advaita Vedanta, he is the one great master. But he has another side, just like Sri Aurobindo has life divine, which is very philosophical, and Savitri, which is poetical. These are representing extremely different aspects. In life divine, we will find hundreds of references to the word supermind. In Savitri, we will not find. There are only some four references. But the word love is used a huge number of times. So here is Shankara, who had written a lot of poetry. And one of them, very, very important, that is called Saundarya, the intoxication of beauty of the goddess. And that's where the tantric knowledge was preserved, and it was a codified language. It is highly revered textbook, Saundarya. But that side of him is less known. But it contains tremendous knowledge about yantras, mantras, and the divine shakti. Next. And then comes the Islamic conquest of India, starting from, say, 1200 CE to 1700. Here again, you see an interesting thing, that southern tip is untouched. Except the northern part of Kerala that was conquered. Islamic invasion still left Kerala untouched. There was very strong defense happening from this side. And the right side, what you see is the various period in which the Islamic expansion took place and contracted and expanded. Finally, this is the final Mughal Empire that came. So that individuality that is preserved over there, protected over there, certain knowledge remained untouched. Let's move on. Kerala School of Mathematics. It is a less known side of Kerala. From 1300 to 1600, there was very highly sophisticated development of mathematics taking place there. And much before Newton and Leibniz developed calculus, theorems related to calculus was very developed here. And this book called Tantra Sangraha, when they're talking about Tantra, they're not talking about today what is known as Tantra. This, what is shown on the right side, in the mathematical, it's a book on mathematics written in Sanskrit. And this is highly sophisticated mathematical tools they were developing. And this period is important because, next slide. We missed one? Okay. That's fine. We will come to it. Maybe I will explain this first. By this period, 1495 to 1575, that's a period, Stuljathu Raman Eluthachan, he created the Malayalam script. Till then, we were using the Devanagari script or Brahmi script to write Malayalam. Malayalam was there, but the script was, especially for the learned people, Sanskrit and Devanagari was the script, for especially for science. And he was known as the father of Malayalam. And this is one of the beautiful poems that he wrote. And actually, it can be translated as, he is talking about the beginning of creation from the Om sound, how it splits into three sounds, fundamental Bija Mantras, what Sri Aurobindo calls the linguistic embryology. He says it will be a future science. And these people are talking about how from the Bija Mantra it turns into three, and when that happens, the onlooker tends to imagine, to feel the ahankara, the sense of separation, that I am the creator of all this. And then the Narayan, the Lord, stands behind and reminds you it's not you. So he's talking about that, and there was a very deep tantric knowledge. When I say tantric knowledge, I'm talking about the technology part of it, the mantric side of it, and let's move on to the next. And here is another poet called Kundana. He brought in the bhakti aspect in Kerala, and the first few lines are very beautiful.
Krishna Krishna Mukunda Janardana Krishna Govinda Narayana Hare Achyutananda Govinda Madhava Sachidananda Narayana Hare.
This is very common in Kerala. Temples are even now it is sung, and every single in Kerala uses these lines and render it in their own ways. It's part of a long memory chain. Next. Here is where it's important to remember, from 1300 to 1600 there was mathematical knowledge, there was school of mathematics that was happening, and within short time there was in Europe Newton and Leibniz creating calculus and fully developed system, which was failed here, which did not happen in India. And in between is the story where Vasco da Gama comes 1498. There is a rediscovery of India, because after the fall of the Roman Empire, Europe lost the connection with India and lost the knowledge about the trade route and knowledge about the monsoon winds. And later they discover it, and he goes all the way down Africa and finally reaches a place called Calicut. That's in Kerala, and that is his memorial in Calicut. That's the place where he landed. And now there's a lot of investigation going on. Again, then the trade begins. Did the mathematical knowledge that was already developed here go through the trade route? And now a lot of people are investigating this particular aspect. So far they have not found any evidence. But global mind is such, if any development happens in one part, it is part of the human inheritance. Just like between Newton and Leibniz themselves, they independently discovered calculus. So it's quite possible that this, in Kerala, there was this development of mathematics to a certain point and it was arrested. Next phase was happening in Europe, and there was a fullness of calculus and the methodology developed there, with which later the technologies were developed and conquest. Come back to India. Okay, next. That is the Travancore Dutch War happening. Oops. So there were many European powers trying to take control over India, and Dutch was one of them. And this was a war with the Kerala King, but the Dutch East India Company fails, loses the war. That was the end of their control over Indian territories, and then the British East India Company takes over India. So this particular sculpture is in Trivandrum, one of the temples. Move on to the next. Then the British Raj comes and establishes the largest kingdom and even conquers down south. That was the first time the entire area was conquered and Kerala came under the rule. Next. And one interesting thing, Hermann Gundert, who was in Kerala, he was a German missionary. He created Malayalam grammar, Malayalam English dictionary, and his grandson, Hermann Hesse, wrote Siddhartha. So that was the cultural influence that happened. Like, grandfather was here, he was absorbing all these. Germans were very much interested in the knowledge they had, whereas the British were more interested in the material wealth. So the Portuguese were more concerned about how to convert people into Christianity. So they had very different focus. Yes. So friends, they were very little influence here. So this is one of the cross-fertilization that took place through this lineage. Next. And we are coming to modern time, where he was a reformer, Sri Narayan Guru, and made a huge transition to Kerala. But by the time Kerala had already fallen into deep decline and superstitions, and the knowledge was lost, and untouchability and caste system, everything was strangling the society. And he came in as a revolutionary, creating major transformation, and he came from the lower class. And in Kerala, the lower class was rising at that time. and he was one of the pioneers. And later, when I left my profession in search of my own journey, I went to an ashram which was in his lineage, the third guru, who was settled in Uti, and I was in his ashram. And that's the old link. And next in hierarchy, after him, there was a guru called Nataraja Guru. He sent him to Sorbonne, and where he was integrating Bergson philosophy of evolution, creative evolution, Neil and Meitner, all those theories. And that he was the sort of person who was reading Newton's the Principia Mathematica, like we read normal books. So he was pretty much into all this and synthesizing knowledge from the East and the West. And he, second Nataraja Guru, who had written a lot of books that are not known. He is very little known all over in India. And his successor was Guru Nitya. I spent some 10 months spending time with him. It was a great time. And when I went there, he asked me what kind of books you need. If you want anything, you just tell me, I will get it. So I asked him, I want to have the fractal geometry of the Nouvelle Brunch. It was a mathematics book by a French mathematician. And he didn't even blink his eyes. He immediately ordered the book, and I got the book within a short time. So it was not an ashram that was meeting the conventional type, but he was open to all kinds of knowledge. And later he suggested me to read books by there was a comparison of Rodel, ratio and back, how the underlying structures are the same. So these were the type of intellectual development he was encouraging. And yeah, that is his lineage. Let's move on. So the working class was rising in Kerala. And in 1956, Kerala State was formed after the independence. And the first government that came up in Kerala was a democratically elected communist government. First time in the world. Without violence. Without killing anybody. And according to Marx, his original theory, communism was supposed to come as an end stage of industrialization. Kerala had not gone through industrialization. It was an agrarian society. Yet Kerala was very open from the early days. It had a certain openness towards all cultures, trade, all this. So the communist idea was very appealing, especially the working class was rising. And he was EMS Nambudiri Patil. He was a Brahmin, but he was the leader of the working class. He left the Brahmin caste and he became the leader and established the first government that was elected communist government. But the center had problems with this communism development happening in Kerala. And government was dismissed later. Lot of politics starts. Next. And that's the last slide, from God of Small Things to God's Own Country. Here we have Arundhati Roy, whose mother was Mary Roy. She was a woman activist in Kerala. She was a firebrand revolutionary. Her father was from Bengal. And Bengal and Kerala had this connection of this communism. And her father was from Bengal and mother was from Kerala. And she grew up in Kerala. And you know what kind of firebrand she is. She comes from that kind of background. And other side is, she represents intellectuality, and Madame Nandamayi now representing the love aspect. Kerala had a domination of intellectuality. And now we could say we are getting balanced by her. We get too much into the head, and she is bringing the right balance into the society. And at the center is Krishna. This is one of the popular images in Kerala. The Lord dissolves his creation every once in a while. And that's called Pralaya, the dissolution. And when it dissolves, and he takes us as a little baby on a pickle leaf, and in the ocean he floats, sucking his toe. And that is him, little Krishna, on a leaf, floating in the ocean of Pralaya. And he keeps all the memories, and he's not worried about what's happening. So even our Prime Minister, the Chief Minister in Kerala, like any other Chief Minister, so there was to be someone called Karunakaran. Whatever happens in the state, so what? Pralaya? So what? Look at the lodge.
Oh, I might stop at this point because he gives the assurance, don't worry. The dissolution and creation will go on and the evolution will go on. Kalki, and now that is our story. From that entire lineage, we come to our story and God will guide you.
Stop at this point.
Thank you.